Welcome to the weekend and this edition of the Florida Roundtable. My name's Bill Mick. I'm your host for the day and, the show every weekend, actually. You can catch up with me and podcast of the Florida Roundtable at the top of the page at BillMick.com. Election 2024 is behind us for Florida. Some of the rest of the country is still catching up, but we're going to talk about that as well as we explore Election 2024 this weekend on the Florida Roundtable with political scientist Chris Muro. Chris has been a frequent guest here on the show talking all things political. I look forward to his insights today as we take a look at elections during a hurricane, turnout and expectations, how the polls performed, and much more ahead this weekend on the Florida Roundtable with Chris Muro from the Florida News Network. We continue in moments.
Nothing's better than taking to Florida's waterways with family and friends. But some boat operators don't realize that bow riding is extremely dangerous. It can lead to tragic accidents if someone falls overboard because of speed or direction changes. Be sure your passengers sit only in manufacturer-designated areas while underway. Their safety is your responsibility. Safe boating is no accident. To learn more, visit the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission at myfwc.com.
Did you and your family lose Florida Medicaid and need health coverage? Check this out. You may be eligible to enroll in a low-cost health plan at healthcare.gov. With the new law, 4 out of 5 customers can find a plan for $10 or less per month with financial help. Healthcare.gov offers quality plans that cover doctor visits, prescriptions, emergency care, and more. Healthcare.gov is here for you. Enroll today for coverage starting the first of next month. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Stop your grinding with Brooks Nygaard.
Are you waking up in the morning with a sore jaw, headaches, ringing in your ears, all because you're grinding and clenching your teeth at night? That's exactly what was going on with me. I ended up going to a dentist, and he wants to charge over $600 for a night guard. That's when I found the Brooks Night Guard. You mold it at home to the top or bottom teeth. Other mouth guards go all the way to the back, which allows the back teeth to touch. This is where most of the grinding and clenching occurs. The Brooks Night Guard redirects the bite force away from the back teeth, reducing jaw pain while still protecting the teeth. This unique design is what makes Brooks Night Guard different from all other traditional grind guards. Order your Brooks Night Guard today and get 10% off plus free shipping. Go to BrooksNightGuard.com and enter the code Brooks95. That's BRUX95.
Stop your grinding with Brooks Night Guard.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundtable on this post-election edition thereof, as we'll take a look with Florida and election 2024 with political scientist Chris Muro, who rejoins us here on the roundtable. Chris, good to have you back, my friend. It's nice to see you.
Good to be seen, Bill. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me here.
Yes, sir. As just a matter of reintroduction for this audience, let's talk about your background a little bit.
Well, I have a master's degree in political science from the University of Central Florida. Did undergraduate work at Georgetown University.
Mm-hmm.
Been involved in Florida politics since 1994.
Okay, so a little experience in that realm, huh?
Absolutely.
Well, I tell you what, we got a lot of ground to cover. So now that we got your credentials out there and we know who you are, not that we didn't. First thing off the top, elections in Florida, hurricane season, and in a hurricane zone. Any impact significant with the storms and changing things? The governor issued a couple of executive orders, and the supervisors of elections were able to adjust some things like sending out mail ballots to other addresses or extending days of voting. How did Florida's reaction to the hurricanes in an election play out from your perspective?
Oh, well, I think it was absolutely a textbook. It worked perfectly, and other states emulated what was going on here in Florida, you know, Georgia, North Carolina,
right?
Actually communicating with and working with
Secretary of State Cord Bird.
Cord Bird.
He was with us a couple of weeks ago. Yeah.
Right. So administration officials. So I think there was some great leadership there from our governor and in his administration.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw in North Carolina, you know, there was some concern there, especially with the rural part of the state that was hardest hit.
Up around outside of Asheville, that area.
Absolutely.
It was devastated. It was horrible.
Yeah, and there's been no allegations of any kind of inappropriate behaviors. No one has complained that their ballot has been lost or they didn't receive one or didn't have an opportunity to participate.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it it had potential to be a problem, but it turned out not at all. They handled it very well.
Do you give a big credit to Florida's leadership in handling storms and elections for years?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I think Governor DeSantis has really taken it to the next level. And I'm just not my own personal view. If you take a look at polling on this, his approval rating across the board on handling storm and post-storm cleanup and relief.
He's done a very good job of that in his term as office. That's absolutely
yes,
true.
Yes, it's super majority approval. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's jump into the rest of the election. Let's start with the turnout and expectations. What were you thinking going into Election Day? And how did it compare with what happened?
Well, I was anticipating that it would be slightly lower than 2020, but also it would be very robust.
Okay.
And that's exactly what happened. So we, because there's a lot of turmoil in the world. And my premise is that the more turmoil, chaos, economic, political, military, geopolitical chaos, the higher the turnout is.
Okay.
And I think that you can see that across the board, not just in the United States, but around the world. So I was expecting a very robust turnout, and it was. We have, as of right now, there's about 145 million votes that have been cast. It's only about just under 9 million fewer than 2020. But remember, 2020 was the highest turnout in a presidential election since the year 1900.
Wow.
And another fact, Bill, is that 2018, 20, and 22 had record turnout, biggest turnout in over 100 years for midterm and that presidential election.
Okay.
So since 2016, we've seen turnout go up dramatically.
The turnout was, I guess, huge in that regard then. What about how the turnout turned out? Any surprise there as far as early voting, mail balloting, and in-person voting?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, because based upon the last 40 years, higher turnout has not always been good for Republicans.
Right.
And the fact that not only was there robust turnout, but the Republican advantage, the biggest advantage since 1988, this just is testament to the turnout machine, the get-out-the-vote effort that the Trump administration and the Trump campaign, rather, was able to successfully do.
We'll talk that, the results and analysis of them, when we continue on the Roundtable.
That sound is every driver's worst fear. How much will the repairs cost? Is it your engine, your transmission, or worse? A car breakdown could cost you thousands to repair, but not if you have CarShield. CarShield administrators pay your claims directly to the mechanic or dealer of your choice, saving you time and money. Call CarShield today before your next breakdown. Call 800-954-1023. That's 800-954-1023.
Do you have an invention idea but don't know what to do next? Call InventHelp today. We have representatives nationwide who will explain the InventHelp process step by step. Over 10,000 patents have been secured through InventHelp's patent referral services. The InventHelp data bank includes thousands of companies who have agreed to review new ideas. We've been helping inventors since 1984. Let's help you next. Get started today.
Call us for free information at 1-800-577-2648. That's 1-800-577-2648.
Hello, I'm Hector Elizondo, Emmy Award-winning actor, and I want to talk to you about getting older. My body hurts, my joints ache, and sometimes I forget.
I forget that doing all your own scenes for a movie isn't always the best decision, especially when you're galloping side saddle down a countryside road on a horse named Archibello, who seems to have only one speed, high. And pulling on his reins only seems to encourage him to go even faster. So, of course, my body hurts and my joints ache, but it's not because of my age. It's because I'm living my life. Oh, Archibello!
Don't let life pass you by. Take care of your brain health. It may just help you stay on top of your game.
As soon as this scene wraps, I'm going to kiss the ground, thank Archibello for his outstanding performance, feed him a carrot, and visit brainhealth.gov.
Find out how you can make the most of your brain as you age at brainhealth.gov.
Political scientist Chris Muro with us on the Florida Roundtable here from the Florida News Network. Nice to have you along this weekend, wherever you may be listening across the Sunshine State. Chris, let's just jump in. Biggest race on the ticket was Donald Trump running to be elected to the White House again after sitting out a term, after his first term. Give me your analysis of this thing. Was it a surprise?
It's the greatest comeback, I think, in political history, Bill.
Really?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a statement.
It's just stunning. It's absolutely stunning. The fact of the matter is that only one president prior to Donald Trump has served non-consecutive terms, and that was Grover Cleveland, the 22nd and 24th president.
Okay.
So, the idea of that happening is, quite unique. But Grover didn't face the same kind of obstacles that Donald Trump did. And that was with a number of lawsuits,
criminal charges, civil
and criminal,
yeah,
going after him for hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, going after his personal wealth, trying to put him in jail with criminal convictions. When that didn't work, the relentless smear campaign against him and his character. Especially in the last, this was up to the last day of the campaign, where he was called fascist and Hitler and all kinds of just rather juvenile names.
Well, let me ask you, was that a mistake by the Harris campaign and those running it, that they didn't talk enough policy, they didn't talk enough specifics on turning the country around, and they tried to make it a referendum on personality rather than policy?
Well, I think that if they had more time to talk about policy, that wouldn't have been a good move either. I don't think that, and I've said this before, Harris, just on the policy acumen scale, is really, really low. And every time
she tried everything Joe Biden did in the previous 4 years.
Well, and she wouldn't change one thing, right? She wouldn't ask.
That's what she said.
Right. So her knowledge and grasp of policy issues was extremely low to begin with. I think the beginning of the unraveling of her campaign was when they decided, let's get her out in front of the media. Right, because she was being criticized for not doing media events. I think that sit down with Oprah, and then the 60 Minutes, the Howard Stern, the Stephen Colbert, and on, I think that was the beginning of the unraveling of her. The more FaceTime she got.
We later learned a week or so after the election that she had paid Harpo, Oprah's production company, to do the event, and that there were other paid celebrities the night before the election paying for the concerts at the various venues around the country for bringing in the stars who endorsed her. That came late, but it's a credibility thing at that point if you're having to pay your supporters to talk about you.
Well, I think that backfired as well because, Trump didn't bring out music artists and all the rest of this. He brought out like the girls' swim team that wanted to keep girls in sports.
Issue related folks.
Issue related
from regular Americans.
Regular folks. Not the George Clooney's.
Right.
Not the Taylor Swift's, the Oprah Winfrey's. He brought real Americans who are facing challenges in their daily lives. And I think that was much more appealing than it was to have this A-list of celebrities.
So that played to American voters in the heartland.
Absolutely. And we can demonstrate this by the data, Bill. What we've seen here is a major shift in a number of key demographics.
Let's go ahead and talk about those. We've got plenty of time here.
Yeah, and one of those is, of course, the folks who are making $50,000 or less. In 2016, Clinton carried that group by over 25 points.
James Carville, it's the economy, stupid.
It's the economy, stupid. And you've got, even among non-college educated, those without a four-year degree in the workforce, those making under $50,000, those blue-collar folks who have been supposedly traditionally Democrat for many years, Trump has closed that gap and even expanded to a 14-point lead among those who do not have four-year degrees in the workforce. So this is
a party. So he's playing to them.
He is. He's making this a, you know, so there's your, there, if you want to talk about a realignment here, there's where it is. You see movement of that traditional blue-collar workforce. We used to call them Reagan Democrats back in the day.
Right.
Moving substantially to the Republican Party.
And yet the
Trump's
Democratic
leadership.
Party's historically had the label of being the party of the working man. Is that a change? And is that a change that's likely to be permanent, or at least for a while?
I think there's potential for that. I mean, you know, I think a lot of this is definitely Trump-centered. I mean, I've heard a lot about, you know, talk about there's a Republican realignment here and all. I think be careful there.
Yeah.
I think this is a Trump-centered, more than a Republican-centered realignment. And so,
is it changing the Republican Party?
That remains to be seen, but I think that there is evidence of that. I think what you're seeing in the representatives that are being elected for the House of Representatives, for example, I think you're seeing a new crop of Republicans who are going to be more in tune and focused on those kind of issues of appealing to middle America and blue-collar America. And maybe there could be some permanent movement in those Rust Belt states because of it, that so-called blue wall.
Especially if the economy starts improving, their lives are better, their money's going further, that's going to make a difference for those folks.
Absolutely. And I think it depends, too, on subsequent Republican administrations and candidates. Are they going to continue to appeal by saying we're going to have fair trade, we're going to make sure that American workers are not going to be unfairly competing with you know, foreign workers who don't have the same kind of environmental regulations and things of that nature to keep it to keep American jobs competitive.
On that front, are you surprised at all that President Trump has pretty much immediately come out and started naming cabinet members? We're going to get into specifics later. And policy discussions involving other countries, Mexico, countries in Europe, and how we're going to deal with those, tariffs being a part of the equation, for example, with Mexico. If they don't stop the caravans of illegal immigrants coming in across the border, then tariffs are going to start hitting their products coming into the country. That was a pretty immediate discussion that the president started having, and it appears to be having impact.
You know, I'm not surprised, Bill, because, you know, he did this the first time around. You know, he started talking about tariffs on companies that didn't bring jobs back to the United States. And you saw a number of companies, John Deere, a whole bunch of other companies, even before the inauguration the last time.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not surprising.
And we're hearing
to
those
me.
Rumbles again.
And we are. And, I, you know, it doesn't surprise me that, you know, he's out there working on, I think, negotiation between Russia and Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going on behind the scenes. I think, like you said, the use of tariffs, the use of access to the most incredible economic market in the world, the U.S. consumer, and our $26 trillion GDP, if you're going to have access to that market, there's going to be some things that you need to do. Like Mexico, you need to make sure that there's not that endless caravan of people streaming into our country illegally. Other countries around the world, China and others,
Will that have an impact with them and Taiwan?
I think so. I think so. I think you're going to see a cooling of hostilities in Asia as well.
Okay.
And, you know, remember, China is dependent upon the United States here. You know, they need the access to the American market to fund and keep their, you know, regime in power. To keep
they need to move those refrigerators. They need to move those color TVs.
They do. But it's not money for nothing anymore. It's you're going to have to have you're going to have to meet a few of these criteria. There's going to have to be more stability, and I think Trump is demonstrating that leadership right now pretty effectively.
That's interesting. And a little bit of inside radio for you. We record this show, and it airs on the weekend. We're recording it midweek. It's Wednesday as we record this. As it stands right now, in the race for the House of Representatives, Republicans have won 216 seats. The Democrats have 207, according to the latest numbers from Fox News. We need 218 for Republicans to control the House. How do you see that playing out? And will Congress back up the president with these kinds of policy decisions by implementing law that puts them in play and puts them in play long term, not just an executive order that could be overturned at some point?
Right. Well, I think the majority here is going to be extremely narrow. The Republicans will have the majority, but it'll probably be 220 to 215, 219 to 216, somewhere. That's okay. Very, very close. There's only been 10 Congresses in the past 180 years, Bill, that have had, or six Congresses, rather, that have had 10 or fewer seats separating the majority from the minority. So that is how unique this situation is,
okay,
how narrow this majority is. And that's why I'm kind of surprised a little bit by the fact that he's already tapped two members of the House.
That was concerning me when I saw it happen.
Right, Stefanik and Waltz here from Florida's 6th Congressional District.
Correct.
As a national security advisor.
And Elise Stefanik
to the U.N. ambassador.
And she's a powerful Republican in the House. She's the number 4 ranking Republican there.
Right, right. She's in leadership there.
Her replacement, if it is a Republican, is not going to have that level of power. So that's a bit of a loss in the House, I would think.
Well, I mean, maybe for the people in that district, but looking at it from just the numbers perspective of keeping that majority, when you have such
And advancing the president's agenda, because she's a big ally.
Well, yeah, but you're going to need that. I think anybody who's going to be running in a special election, I think there's going to be, if not overtly, they're going to be involved in who's going to be the candidate.
Mm-hmm.
So whoever would win there. But if it's a special election, Bill, that's risky. If you're talking about a 2 or 3 seat majority, taking people out of the House and having a special election, that is a risky move. You're risking the majority. And, the majority comes with, membership on all the committees. If you have a majority party, you're going to be, and that's where any kind of legislation is going to come out of. It's got to come out of the committee first.
Sure.
So you need to have control of that body. So I'm a little concerned there, Bill.
Are you surprised at all? And we just got a yes or no answer here at the large number that the Senate came up with as far as Republican majority there. Did that surprise you?
Yeah, it did a little bit. Yeah.
We'll explore that and more as we continue with Chris Muro here on the Florida Roundtable. Glad you're with us.
Florida is kayaking country. Kayaks are a great vessel for exploring the state's beautiful waterways, but it's important to be prepared for the journey, regardless of your experience level. Get your boater education and learn about you and your craft's abilities. It'll help you have a safer, more enjoyable time on the water. Before you go, know your limits and always wear your life jacket. Safe boating is no accident. To learn more, visit the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission at myfwc.com.
Do you have an invention idea but don't know what to do next? Call InventHelp today. We have representatives nationwide who will explain the InventHelp process step by step. Over 10,000 patents have been secured through InventHelp's patent referral services. The InventHelp data bank includes thousands of companies who have agreed to review new ideas. We've been helping inventors since 1984. Let's help you next. Get started today.
Call us for free information at 1-800-558-5497. Again, 1-800-558-5497.
If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it'll take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 10 million people. Without destroying your credit, they can reduce your interest rates, lower your total payments up to 30 to 50% to get you out of debt fast. For a free consultation, call Consolidated Credit now. The program works. Call 1-800-206-6755. 1-800-206-6755. 1-800-206-6755. Consolidated Credit Counseling Services, Inc. 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services and by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM 1492. Oregon DM 80092. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation. Commission License Number DC 83. Service may adversely affect the individual's credit. Non-payment of debt may lead to additional finance charges or collections activity, including legal action, not a loan company.
Hi, I'm Johnny Erickson Tata. Growing up with a brother with autism, Sarah Crump witnessed firsthand how kids with disabilities felt left out by their peers. It's why at the age of 15, Sarah approached her cheerleading coach with an idea to include girls with disabilities on her school's cheer team. Well, what started out as an inclusive high school cheer team in a small town in Iowa has led to what is now known as Sparkle Effect, a thriving nonprofit with over 180 cheer teams across the United States, bringing students with and without disabilities together through cheerleading. The result? More confidence, higher grades, and better school attendance for kids with disabilities. And for those without a disability, new friends and a greater empathy. You want to learn more? Well, visit disabilitycampaign.org, where we have posted a link to the fabulous work known as The Sparkle Effect.
We're here early before they wake up. We stay late, we stay informed, we invest in the latest technology.
We take the time to train the next generation of doctors and nurses. We work together to make sure we heal their bodies and their minds.
We do this not because it's our job, but because this is about our veterans' lives. This is our mission. More than 300,000 of us working as one, together with families and loved ones. No matter where they live in this country, we'll be there.
We all come together and stand together to serve our veterans. We stand strong, united. Stand with us in caring for our veterans.
Imagine. Imagine being denied an apartment because of your religion, or your race, or because you have children, or a disability.
It's so wrong.
Yes, but who has the power to stop this?
You do. Each of us has the power. The law is on your side. It's illegal for landlords to discriminate because of race, color, religion, sex, national origin, disability, or familial status. If you suspect that you have experienced housing discrimination, file a complaint with HUD immediately so we can investigate it. Fair housing is your right.
Use it.
To learn more, visit HUD.gov/fairhousing. That's HUD.gov/fairhousing. Or call 1-800-669-9777. 1-800-669-9777. A public service message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
A post-election edition of the Florida Roundtable. Bill Mick with political scientist Chris Muro as we explore the aftermath of this election and where it's likely to take us. Chris, we were talking about the Senate results. We're waiting for the final results in the House. It appears the Republicans will have control in the House, and the Senate already in Republican control with the results already done with a majority of 53-47. So what's the impact there? A president, both houses of Congress, it would sound like an opportunity to advance a Trump agenda here.
Well, absolutely. So, basically I hope that the president will stop tapping members of the House of Representatives. Leave that thing alone, please.
Mm-hmm.
All right, because, yes, let's take a look at this. We've got unified government now, right? The Republicans have the White House, the Senate, and
maybe
the
biggest
House.
Thing it stopped is impeachment attempts if the Democrats were in control.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And that those windows are very narrow, right? Every president, for the past 50 years has had a very small window of unified government.
Mm-hmm.
2 years is usually the max,
right?
And then it's lost in the midterm. So keep that in mind, that there is a small window of opportunity here to get things done, to cut taxes, and to implement the agenda.
To extend the Trump tax cuts.
Exactly, which is one of the biggest issues, is because those are going to, after the 2025 tax year, those are set to expire. They need to be reauthorized, mm-hmm. and that's what you know,
and
should
those
be
helped.
On the,
unlike the messaging prior to the election, those helped middle America.
Oh, absolutely. The standard deductions are just enormous compared to what they were in 2016. $18,000 for married filing jointly, more in 2024 than it was in 2016. That is a huge reduction in the tax burden for middle America, not just the billionaires.
That's a boost to the family.
That's right. Not just the billionaires, they're the ones that pay taxes. I think if you're going to cut taxes, it should be cut for those who are paying taxes. I got no problem with that. Those are the job creators.
Understand.
But this tax, Trump's tax plan, not only Does it stimulate economic growth for the supply side? It also, like you said, Bill, helps out regular merit families with this great tax structure.
Working folks, no doubt.
So let's make sure that we don't tap anybody else from the House. But the Senate, definitely there was some surprises there, taking down Brown, incumbent in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
So flipping that seat, I think that was very important. Pennsylvania, still looking for the final certification, but that looks like it's going Republican as well.
Mm-hmm.
West Virginia, that was an easy pickup there. Montana, ousting Senator Tester. So that was definitely a stronger performance in the Senate side.
And when we talked prior to the election, you were telling me Trump's not going to have a lot of coattails. At least it didn't look that way until very late in the season. And then all of a sudden it started picking up a little.
That is true. So he had a little bit more coattail effect than I had anticipated. But remember also that Democrats did survive in Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
They survived in Wisconsin, and they kept hold of that seat in Michigan,
right? Minnesota
and Arizona. Arizona should have been a Republican pickup,
and it didn't happen.
But Kerry Lake, again, I've always said this, just not a strong candidate, just not a strong candidate there.
All right, very good. What do the exit polls tell you about the electorate and making these decisions? What are we learning about the voters as this election was settled?
Well, there was some major changes demographically, Bill, that are just profound. as far as the female vote, Clinton carried women by 13 points in 2016, Biden by 15 points in 2020, Harris by 8 points. That's 7 points lower than Joe Biden did just 4 years ago among female voters. So there's much ballyhooed talk about this massive gender gap. And it's always, unfortunately, the way they talk about it, they don't realize that the Democrats have a major problem with the gender gap as well, and that is with male voters. So the fact is that the gender gap for the Democrats just wasn't as profound as they had been telling us it was.
Was it kitchen table issues? Was it the cost of feeding your family, running your kids to soccer practice or whatever it may be?
Absolutely. The cost of housing, gas, food, inflation in general was cited as a major reason why. And again, people trusted the Republicans and Trump to deal with the most important issues. Immigration, the economy, safety and security, those issues. The only thing that Harris had as an advantage was the handling of abortion. That was it.
And the Democrats have been riding that issue since forever. Nancy Pelosi's always been throwing it in front of folks for the last 2 or 3 years.
Right.
And as it was such a focus, we had an amendment on it here in Florida that did not pass because of our 60% requirement for a constitutional amendment, yet it did get over half of the electorate's vote.
It's true. So the voters were able to separate, hey, listen, we can do this state by state level, and we can vote on these policy issues here. But when it comes to who we're going to vote for to run the country, that issue was not a determining factor. Even though the narrative was abortion is going to give power to the Democrats across the board, this was their winning issue. I mean, even here in Florida, Nikki Fried and Debbie Powell running against Rick Scott, they doubled down on this, and they believed that the abortion issue was going to turn Florida blue.
Well, with it on the ballot, it had a chance because there's a lot of money behind it wanting to put that amendment in play.
Yeah.
What's that tell us about the electorate? Did they understand that the overturning of Roe versus Wade put this in the hands of the states and that many of us believe that's where it belongs instead of a federal mandate here? Is the country accepting that? Is that what we're seeing out of these results?
I think that's what we can conclude here, Bill, is that people, the American people, are understanding that this is a federalism issue, that it's going to be decided state by state, and that they can decide it within their state and they can separate it from the national politics and the national agenda. And again, while they cited there was more support for abortion rights than for restricting it, they separated that from how they cast their vote nationally, not only for President Trump, but also for Senate candidates and for House candidates.
Very, very interesting. What other things are we learning about the demographics of this election? Other surprises that were
there? Yeah, some big surprises, Bill. Joe Biden in 2020 carried the youth vote by 25 points. That is voters under 30.
Okay.
All right. And let's just be clear, they make up about 15% of the total electorate, just to keep that in mind here.
Okay.
But you can go back, Bill, to 1980. And it wasn't, except for a Reagan landslide in 84, that the youth vote has always tilted Democrat.
Okay.
All right. But the problem is that in order for that to make a difference, you're going to need to have a 20-point lead. Harris ended up with a 10-point lead. So that was a major shift from a 25-point lead for Biden in 2020 to a 10-point lead, closing that gap by 15 points. That was dramatic. Now, here's another thing, Bill. We saw this in the early polling with Biden. The polling with Biden back at the beginning of the year was telling us he was losing support with younger voters.
How do you explain that?
I think younger voters were being turned off, first of all, by Biden and his inability to articulate things and his declining stature.
Okay.
Also, the bad policies. I think that they were affecting everybody across the board, particularly young people, though, they're kind of frustrated that they can't buy a car, they can't buy auto insurance.
But they're still living with mom and dad.
They're still living with mom and dad. Mm-hmm. The job prospect isn't so great. There's a lot of student debt, and Biden tries to wave his magic wand and get rid of it, and that didn't work out. Inflation, the cost of everything going up so dramatically, all of these things just had an impact. And even having the Swift endorsement wasn't going to stop the, really a big shift of younger voters towards Trump.
All right. Let's move into another direction here. We've seen the president-elect tap Marco Rubio, Florida senator, for the Secretary of State's job. It appears that that's going to be an official offer and that Rubio will likely take it. Where's that leave us in the state of Florida?
Well, that's fascinating now because the big question is well, then who's going to step into that Senate seat?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of interesting scenarios here. I mean, because, we all know that Governor DeSantis has presidential aspirations. He's termed out after 2026. There's a 2-year gap between 2026 and 2028. So there's a temptation there.
Mm-hmm.
Should I use the Senate seat as a place to, keep in the spotlight as a stepping stone towards the presidency? So he could decide to appoint somebody to keep the seat warm for him.
Worked out well in the past for those who have.
Yeah, that comes to mind. There's a guy named Charlie Crist.
Right.
And, remember, he appointed George Lemieux, and that didn't work out very well for him. So I think there is some important lessons to be learned here, Bill.
I think there are, and I want to explore that when we continue in moments here on the Florida Roundtable. Also have some Florida political issues to look at in the wrap-up to election 2024 right here on the Florida Roundtable from the Florida News Network.
If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it'll take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 10 million people. Without destroying your credit, they can reduce your interest rates, lower your total payments up to 30 to 50% to get you out of debt fast. For a free consultation, call Consolidated Credit now. The program works. Call 1-800-206-6755. 1-800-206-6755. 1-800-206-6755. Consolidated Credit Counseling Services, Inc. 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services and by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM 1492. Oregon DM 80092. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation. Commission License Number DC 83. Service may adversely affect the individual's credit. Non-payment of debt may lead to additional finance charges or collections activity, including legal action. Not a loan company.
Can you imagine rising for work before the crack of dawn? Tending to hundreds of acres of land before dusk? Well, that's what happens on 47,000 Florida farms every day. Florida's farmers work hard to grow nutritious food for you and your family. And you can help support them by enjoying delicious, fresh from Florida produce. Look for the sunny Fresh from Florida logo where you shop, or visit freshfromflorida.com to learn more.
Do you have an invention idea but don't know what to do next? Call InventHelp today. We have representatives nationwide who will explain the InventHelp process step by step. Over 10,000 patents have been secured through InventHelp's patent referral services. The InventHelp data bank includes thousands of companies who have agreed to review new ideas. We've been helping inventors since 1984. Let's help you next. Get started today.
Call us for free information at 1-800-558-5497. Again, 1-800-558-5497.
Continuing our look at election 2024 in Florida on the Florida Roundtable, Bill Mick with Chris Muro, political scientist who's a regular here, and I appreciate it, Chris. We were talking about the appointment of Marco Rubio to Secretary of State. Provided that comes to fruition, Governor DeSantis, when he gets back from his Italy trip, has some decisions to start making with him and Representative Waltz having been brought into the Trump administration. The governor's got to decide what to do here. If I'm Ron DeSantis, I really consider resigning the governorship as long as Jeanette Nunez has agreed that she's going to appoint me to the U.S. Senate. And I think that might be wise for him politically. I think it might be good for the state, in all honesty. What do you think there?
You know, I think that's all very risky, Bill.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's been 9 governors in American history who have done that, Bill. They've resigned it, and they've gone to the Senate, and they had their lieutenant governors appoint them. It's happened 9 times, and only one of them has been successfully elected to the Senate on their own after that appointment.
And that would come relatively quickly because this is initially filled by appointment, but that election for that job will be 2026. The next general election, that goes to the people again. So you think that would still bite Governor DeSantis if he did that then?
Well, I think there's some risk there. I mean, obviously Florida is, you know, it's been declared it's no longer a swing state. It's a deep red state, especially
right
after a 14-point win in the presidential contest.
So what do you see as alternatives for DeSantis in that case? Should he want that Senate seat eventually or to run for presidency down the road?
I think maybe looking at it a little bit less conventional wisdom-like, Bill, because the conventional wisdom is he needs to be in some position to keep his name in the spotlight between now and 2028, and the Senate is a great place to do that. Maybe decide that that's not the path to go. Maybe there's an alternative here. Maybe he just continues to be governor until 2026. And really, is there a lot of time between 2026 and the 2028 presidential primary?
Not really, no.
Not a lot of time. So there really isn't going
to
be a lot of time.
So then you sign a deal with Fox News or somebody to be a contributor on a regular basis. Your face is out there for everybody all the time. Potentially, I could see that working.
Yeah, absolutely, and maybe even a little bit of talk radio as well. I'm always an advocate of that.
You're a good man. I like that.
But, yeah, you know, being out in front of the media, being active in, you know, in policy situations, you know, as far as articulating his views, even though he's not going to be a governor. But that's not going to be that big
so
of a
think
of a period
tank
of time
or other place that gets him out there
absolutely
in that role? Okay.
Heritage Foundation. Now that they've overcome their Project 2025 narrative.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right? I think, yeah, there's plenty of places that he can go. So I think it's less risky to do that, and that would be my recommendation.
As we record this show on Wednesday, the Senate is getting ready to vote for its majority leader. Right. Is it unusual for that to happen with the old Senate, seeing how the makeup of the Senate changes after the first of the year? Does that normally happen once the new Senate's seated, or what's going on with this?
Yeah, they do. This is normal protocol.
Is it?
Yeah, that they're going to be voting to select this before January 3rd.
Okay.
What is unique, a sui generis here, Bill, one of a kind, is that the president, through Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy, and Tucker Carlson, and Steve Bannon now, are pushing Rick Scott to be the majority leader.
Seen that could cut both ways. How do you see it?
Well, I tell you, I think this is...
You know, people hearing this Saturday go saying we're right or wrong. One of the two,
know,
so there
I
you
know
go.
Well, I'll tell you, I think this is a big mistake. This is a big mistake for the Trump administration to get involved in this.
The Senate doesn't like to be told what
it
to do.
It does not. There's a reason there's a secret ballot for this.
Mm-hmm.
Is because this is an internal affair. This is an institutional obligation. And I think there's a majority of the Republicans in the Senate have respect enough for the institution that they're going to be turned off. And I've seen headlines with that. You know, the pressure campaign is turning off Republican senators.
I've seen some of that myself.
And I don't think Rick Scott, and that's what's baffling to me, is how Trump world is on board with the Rick Scott proposal here. Because I don't think Rick Scott is the right person for the majority leader.
Well, the two alternatives have been never Trumpers in their time.
Well, you know, they have, and I'm not a big fan of Cornyn being the leader. I would recommend, obviously not perfect, but I think John Thune would be the obvious choice here.
Interesting.
Rick Scott, I don't think he's got the, if you're going to be the majority leader in front of the camera all the time, I don't think he has
Doesn't have the media chops.
I don't think he has the right look for that. I think he has a face for radio, Bill.
And when he's off script, I've had it happen on my local show, not the best in speaking off script.
No, and let's also remember, based on the merits, how did he do in 2022 running the Senate Republican Campaign Committee? It was a disaster. It was a big red wave. When we picked up the House and we picked up state legislative seats, the only place we lost, Bill, was the Senate under Rick Scott's leadership there. I don't think he's the right guy for the job.
That's interesting. We'll see how it plays out. And you may know before we do, because we're recording this on Wednesday. But we're back. We're going to look at Florida issues here on the Florida Roundtable.
If you're living with diabetes and using insulin, you know the pain of pricking your fingers over and over again. By wearing a small remote device called a continuous glucose monitor or CGM, you can reduce the pain of pricking your fingers right away. If you're testing your blood sugar four or more times per day, injecting insulin three or more times per day, or using an insulin pump, call the Diabetic Health Hotline today and learn about the latest CGM technology. A CGM can immediately reduce pain. It's accurate, easy to use, and helps you make better diabetes treatment decisions. And if you have Medicare, you can get a new CGM at little or no out-of-pocket cost. Plus, get free shipping, and we'll bill your insurance company for you. Call now to receive your new continuous glucose monitor at little or no out-of-pocket cost.
Call 800-906-9086. That's 800-906-9086. Again, 800-906-9086. That's 800-906-9086.
I love the ocean.
Me? I love a slow winding river.
I love the lake. Slick as glass.
But nothing compares to what you love inside the boat.
My family.
My child.
My best friend from first grade.
If you're behind the wheel of a boat, pay attention. That way your favorite water will always be safe water. Learn more about boating safety at myfwc.com. Brought to you by the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission.
Healthcare.gov has plans for health because you have plans for life. All plans cover doctor visits and emergency care to keep you and your family running strong. All plans cover hospital stays and prescriptions so you can have peace of mind. Visit healthcare.gov to explore health plans from the brands you know. 4 out of 5 customers can find a health plan for $10 or less per month with financial help. Enroll at healthcare.gov by December 15th for coverage starting January 1st. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Shortness of breath, patients confused, temp 102.
He just had an infection. What's going on?
He's becoming septic.
Antibiotics started. Bed ready, let's move him.
Infections can lead to a deadly chain reaction in your body called sepsis. Very quickly, sepsis can cause tissue damage, organ failure, and even death. If you know the risks, can spot the symptoms, and act fast, then you can get ahead of sepsis. Learn more at cdc.gov/sepsis.
My muscles ached. I was tired all the time.
My son had a full-blown asthma attack. It came out of nowhere.
The unsettling thing about some symptoms is
I had a fever and these terrible headaches.
You don't always know what's causing them.
It was Lyme disease from a tick bite.
I had Zika virus from a mosquito.
He had a reaction to cockroach allergens.
Threats to your health can come from unexpected places. Get the facts. Visit pestrule.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association.
Wrapping up the Florida Roundtable this weekend with political scientist Chris Mero. Chris, we've had so much nationally to talk about that involved integrally the state of Florida, interestingly enough, and that's a good thing for the state as far as I perceive it. We had six constitutional amendments on the ballot statewide. The two big ones that got attention were the recreational marijuana initiative that the marijuana companies around the state, Trulieve in particular, dumping $113 million-plus right. into trying to get it passed. And then you had trying to enshrine abortion into the state constitution. Both of those failed to reach the 60% threshold that was required for them to pass. Tell me what you read into those, and were you surprised that the numbers for both were as high as they were statewide?
Well, the abortion ended up Amendment 4 ended up with about 57% of the vote, so that was a little bit higher. I was expecting about 54%.
Okay,
but the way that amendment was so extreme, Bill, as we talked about many times, and so poorly worded. The fact that
left undefined.
It did. It was just so extreme. The fact that it got that much of the vote, I think, is very concerning. Mm-hmm. And particularly when, Ron DeSantis, Governor DeSantis, really put a lot of political capital out there almost single-handedly to bring enough opposition to stop this thing from being enshrined in our Constitution.
Hard to get the money together for opposition to these things when they're funded by out-of-state interests that really want to push these things on the people
and,
of Florida.
Big money. Mm-hmm. And, you're talking about 10 states. Bill had this on the ballot. It passed in 7 out of 10. That's a 70% success rate.
Wow.
The only three states, including Florida, shot it down. I'm sure they'll be back, probably in 2026. I think they'll wait until the next general election. I don't think they want to put this on in a midterm.
Okay. Very, very good. What about the marijuana amendment?
Yeah, well, definitely a lot of money went into that. The opposition got started a little bit late, but it was enough, enough opposition.
Governor big in that one as well.
The governor was big in that as well as... I think there's a concern here, though, of course, that it's going to come back. They're going to try again. This is 23 million people here that live here. It's 109 million visitors a year.
Sure.
It's a huge market, so they're not going to just let this thing go.
They invested a lot of money, so that's possible.
But
go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the legislature needs to look at something here, Bill. Maybe, if not legalizing it, decriminalization for small amounts, some movement away from the current civil and criminal statutes that we have in place now.
Before we're out of time, let's hit on the Florida legislature. It stayed in veto-proof majorities in both houses. The Florida Senate, the Florida House retained that Republican personality, if you will. Is there any other change there, attitude-wise, or anything else in this legislature?
Well, I think what's going to be interesting to see is, you've got Ron DeSantis in his last two sessions here for 2025 and 2026. Mm-hmm. He's got his Republican supermajority. The question is going to be how much independence is the legislature going to exert? Because
he has controlled that pretty much throughout his term as governor.
Well, he has, until the last term, he didn't have quite the swagger going in because of his, failed presidential bid.
Almost out of time. Speaking of governors, and who knows what happens with ours at the moment, any ideas looking down the road as to who the next governor, or at least those who want to be the next governor, are going to be?
Oh, my money's on Byron Donalds.
I think he'd be strong.
I think he's the guy. I think if he wants this,
if he wants that
if
job,
he wants it, I think it's his. And I think he would be an excellent governor. And I think it'd be a great stepping stone because he's got a big future.
Believe it or not, we are out of time. Next week on the Roundtable, the mother of Thanksgiving. We'll see you then.
You've been listening to the Florida Roundtable with Bill Mick, a news and public affairs presentation of the Florida News Network. The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of this station management, owners, or sponsors. For questions or concerns, contact Florida Roundtable at fnnonline.net.